Earlier this morning, I indicated that Chief Justice O'Connor was ill this morning and didn't want to infect the rest of us. So she is watching the arguments because we have the ability to do live streaming. We'll be participating in the resolution of all the cases that we are considering this morning. And with that explanation, we have two discipline matters, one more merit case, and then we will be administering the oath of office to a number of lawyers. This brings us to case number 10-1894, Cincinnati Bar Association versus Robert Treanor. Mr. Treanor.
Good morning. Good morning, Your Honor. Chief Justice O'Connor, Justices of the Court, Mr. Laufman. May I request the court's permission to apologize to the court? I am here to seek mitigation. I am not here seeking a denial of my wrongdoing. What I did was wrong. The insurance issue that I have struggled with is something that I should have corrected. Have corrected. It was not my intent to be dishonest or selfish. Ms. Childress, as the board found, had a good result in her case. The pattern of misconduct that was asserted by the board, I believe, is more a demonstration of my failure to correct this particular problem. As the board found, during the operative periods when I've had this discipline problem, there was a significant stress issues in my life, which through the Kentucky KLAP, Kentucky Lawyer Assistance Program, I'm also licensed in Kentucky.
As I understand it, Mr. Treanor, you did not have medical malpractice or legal malpractice insurance in effect for this period of time while you were representing this client. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
And you have rectified that situation at this point?
No, sir. I do not have because of the subsequent disciplines, I have been unable to procure at a level that I can afford malpractice insurance. The premiums that I am quoted are in excess of $12,000 to $15,000 a year. So I've gone to, first of all, I have shrinking my Ohio practice, and then I must, when a person wants to hire me for an Ohio matter, I have to I comply with the regulations regarding disclosures, et cetera.
To advise them of your circumstance in that regard.
And it has, you know, a practical effect of that has been to shrink my Ohio practice.
And how many clients were affected in this circumstance that's before us now?
Your Honor, Ms. Childress, in part, relates back to the prior discipline. There were, in fact, Mr. Roberts is the realtor who's present in the courtroom today. When I became aware of, which I should have been, that I needed to send out the disclosure letters with the acknowledgement forms, there were approximately, that was done prior to the prior discipline, there were approximately 76 people that I sent the forms out to. I did send the form to Ms. Childress, but I failed to advise her at the time that she retained me.
Is there any issue of restitution owed to any of these clients?
No, sir. No one has been harmed economically in any fashion.
But the court costs involved here have been returned. The $225 has been refunded. Am I right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you.
And as I stated in my brief filed with the court, that the more appropriate discipline, in part predicated on other cases, and in part to punish me, to prevent me from doing anything like this again, I believe would be more appropriate at the three-month level. A six-month period of suspension to a solo practitioner of my age would be effectively a death sentence to my practice.
Mr. Traynor, have you been continuing to practice here in Ohio?
I have, Your Honor.
And that's without the insurance?
With disclosure.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, part of the problem you've had is disclosing after you've got the client and the client feels like they're already in the case and it's now too difficult to change. How can we be assured that you're going to be doing this disclosure right up front in writing, not some sort of oral thing that is easy for them to miss or misunderstand?
As the commission recommended that there be a monitoring of that process, so I would suggest that we required to produce for any new Ohio client immediately produced the disclosure forms, signed acknowledgement forms, contracts, etc., before I even am permitted to embark upon a representation, Your Honor.
Mr. Traynor, your practice, what could you describe briefly the nature of your practice?
Yes, Your Honor. I do primarily civil plaintiffs' work. I have done, although it's shrinking considerably because of no insurance, I've kind of developed a practice in the field of toxic mold litigation. That's what this particular case evolved around. I do some criminal defense work.
Right. Thank you.
May I reserve 2 minutes
Sure.
for rebuttal? Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you for being as brief as you were. Mr. Laughlin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Chief Justice, the Court, Mr. Traynor, my name is Paul Laughlin. I represent the relator in this matter, Cincinnati Bar Association. I will largely open myself to questions from the panel, though I would like to say on behalf of the Cincinnati Bar Association that this is not a matter that was taken lightly, litigated easily, and I know general counsel from our Bar Association has grave concerns about this, and a lot of consideration was put into the requested penalty. This is a case which is driven by perhaps two major ideas. One is simply the repeat nature of the grievance conduct. This is Mr. Traynor's fourth grievable matter. It's his third within 7 years. And the second is that all of this was at his own creation, and unfortunately, I think what we're seeing are the machinations, perhaps much more intentional and even nefarious than the mea culpa that the court has seen today. All of this began when Mr. Traynor rendered himself uninsurable due to malpractice claims. He then engaged in a course of conduct which attempted to mold his practice to avoid the practical implications that he himself acknowledged here today. He changed his corporate structure in the Commonwealth of Kentucky into a structure which does not require him to notify clients that he doesn't have insurance. That was in response to his first Kentucky grievance. Then, in the state of Ohio, when confronted with the reality that he had to notify clients up front, he went through a grievance process with the Cincinnati Bar Association. As it occurs, the relator in that case, Mr. Kevin Rogers, is present here in court today and will be addressing you in the case following. They sat down with Mr. Traynor, described to him what had to be done. Letters were sent out to the 70-odd people. And in the wake of that, while that case was occurring, he was retained by Ms. Childress. Very purposefully, very intentionally, did not tell her he was uninsured for the reasons I think he's described here today, the very practical effect that that might have. some 7 weeks later, sends her this form, which she never returns. She acknowledges that she was upset by it. There was a discussion of whether she would or would not have hired him. She really needed him as a lawyer. But she also said, I couldn't switch horses at that point. I'd given him almost $1,000. Litigation had commenced. What am I going to do? She never sends the form back, and he never says a word about it. And perhaps one of the greatest concerns we had was literally at the hearing before the panel. The panel members discussed this with Mr. Traynor, and they sort of said, well, is this still going on? Yes. Are you currently representing Ohio clients who have not signed their waivers? Yes. This was in 2010. So when we look at the pattern of conduct here, and Mr. Traynor very appropriately says again, you know, mea culpa, this was an oversight, but we think that the truth is perhaps somewhat belied by the hangdog approach. You know, this has been going on since 2000 when he lost his ability to have insurance. This is not an isolated incident. This is a pattern of intentional conduct to avoid the real-life implications of telling clients he's uninsured. And as the panel pointed out, all of this may have passed unscathed until we iced the cake by not returning client monies, money that Ms. Childress herself would have had to, she went and found out. He would have never told her. She would have never known. And we have to worry about how isolated is this incident. So she calls him up and says, well, I see that the court costs I paid have been refunded. I'm owed $225. Can I have that back? And over a period of months, there's no response, and then he ultimately claims a right to that money. The panel that sat and heard the issue took some issue with that. Quoting from page 26 of the report and recommendation, it is not difficult to conclude that respondent's retention of the refund issued by the clerk was prompted by both a selfish and dishonest motive. He knew the funds did not belong to him, and after Childress brought the matter to his attention and with her multiple phone calls, he was well aware of whom the money belonged to. Apparently, respondent thought Childress would find pursuing the matter too inconvenient and abandon her attempts to retrieve her funds. He clearly miscalculated his client's perseverance. This is my first opportunity standing before this court in this disciplinary capacity, and it is not one which I relish.
Counsel, is the Cincinnati Bar equipped to provide a monitor? I take it you're here to support the recommendation of the board.
Judge, as the low end of penalties appropriate, we support it. Yes.
And are you prepared to furnish him an appropriate monitor?
It is my understanding through Mr. Patterson, who is general counsel with the bar, that yes, there would be a member selected. That person would take
on
the obligation.
The difference this morning is 3 months between his position and your position. Is that what we're to understand?
Yes, Judge. I think that's accurate. Again, this court has inherent authority to do what it sees fit, but I think that's an appropriate view.
Right. Has there been reciprocal discipline in Kentucky?
I'm not aware of any reciprocal discipline. We know at the time he was already on Kentucky probation for events which predated. So it's not that he committed this while in a probationary status. These events were committed while he had a pending Ohio discipline. He then picked up a new Kentucky discipline for which, as I understand it, he's either in the midst of a probated sentence or that probated sentence may have recently expired. But our gist on this case, Judge, was you just can only put somebody on probation so many times. This court has talked about the mishandling of client funds being serious matters in any circumstance. But, yes, the monitoring is something that's very important to the Cincinnati Bar Association, and we would undertake it, is my understanding.
Are you aware of any monetary loss to any of the clients involved in these 72 situations?
Judge, I'm not. Decisions were made whether or not to issue a subpoena to search that out. There was a consideration of a failure to comply or to cooperate with the disciplinary process. And at the end of the day, I think the ultimate decision was those people had not approached the Bar Association, that it was not our role to appropriately perhaps go and find claimants. But no, we are not aware of any harm that has befallen those individuals.
Thank you.
Appreciate the court's
time. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Laufman. Mr. Traynor.
If I may clarify, Your Honor.
Yes.
There has been a reciprocal discipline in Kentucky for the previous Ohio. The discipline in Kentucky that Mr. Laufman referred to, the complaint arose in 2002 and went on for 8 years before being resolved. I did obtain insurance for 2005 and 2006, but as a result of the disciplines, that insurance was canceled. I again apologize to the court and to the members of the bar for my misconduct.
Thank you, Mr. Traynor. The matter is submitted, and you will be advised at the appropriate time of the decision of the court.